Hey everyone, it's Nellie Thomas here. How are you doing? This is Dear Nellie, Sex, Relationships and Dating from the Other Side of 40. We hope you're loving the podcast as much as we are. A few quick things before we get into the show. For information about our fabulous live shows, which we do semi-regularly, go to nelliethomas.com and follow the links. We've just done a few in Melbourne, one in Sydney, and we'll be back for more early next year in 2024. Now, your listener calls are the backbone of this podcast. They're the best. Chuck out the rest. Take a chance. Send me in your question, your comment, your dating story, regret, anything really. We absolutely love hearing from you, and you can remain anonymous. Follow the links on my website or see the show notes for more information. To support the podcast and keep it coming out for free, please rate it on whatever app you're on now. Just pull it out. Hopefully give it a 5-star rating. That helps other people find it. Tell your mates, share it on socials, do all that stuff. If you can, please join Patreon or Acast Plus for $5 a month and you get a bonus episode every month and some other perks. If you can't, that's also fine. Just keep listening every week for free. We can't do this without yous. Now, this podcast was recorded in the council area known as Maribyrnong in Melbourne. I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land, the Wurundjeri, Woiwurrung and Bunurong peoples of the Kulin Nation, and pay my respects to their elders past, present and emerging. Last but not least, if you're new to the podcast, this is a sex, dating and relationships podcast for adults. Let me put it this way. If you don't like swearing, it's really going to give you the shits. So off you fuck.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Dear Nellie, I could use some advice. Dear Nellie, yeah, some help would be nice. Dear Nellie, I'm eager to hear your point of view. Dear Nellie, there's a lot to explore, dear Nellie, when you're 40 or more, dear Nellie, so I'm hoping we can talk it through. Dear Nellie, I'm rocking my prime and it's time to get down some. Baby, mess around some. It's never too late to start again, dear Nellie.
Let's do this. All right. Welcome to Dear Nellie, Sex, Dating and Relationships from the Other Side of 40. We are joined by, oh my God, how to describe Alice Fraser, lawyer.
That is exactly
initially.
How I want to be described, is to never be able to be fully summed up in one sentence, which
me too.
Just absolutely ruined my
Do
career.
Do not categorize me. I'm going to throw a few words out and then you can rebuff them if you don't
fabulous.
Like them. Trained in law.
Mm-hmm.
Right, improviser mm-hmm. initially, yep. stand-up comedian,
yep,
podcaster, yep. broadcaster,
yep.
writer,
yep.
workshop facilitator, far out mum,
yep,
human,
yeah, well, human questionable, depends on the day.
3-star review for the human part,
yep.
My goodness, that's a lot of hats.
Yeah, it's an odd thing. I never feel like I'm doing enough, or like the things I'm doing are in themselves enough.
Really?
Yeah, although actually getting through COVID and keeping my career going was a big shift in that story for me.
Mm.
And also finishing this book was a big like, oh yeah, I can actually do things. But yeah, that's the imposter syndrome of somebody who's in a creative industry when most of your family is not.
Yes.
You know, they have real jobs. Yes. So what is mine, and does it really count, and do any of the things actually add up to anything?
Yes, I understand that feeling, but I'm here to tell you from, I think I'm what, 10 years older than you, you are definitely doing enough, girl. Like far out. When I saw on your socials that you were doing Edinburgh Festival pregnant, I mean, yes. I had a PTSD reaction. Like Edinburgh Fringe just about killed me two times over, let alone if I was also pregnant. Like that is wild.
It was a really interesting exercise in, first of all, not doing, because I was doing it with the toddler and pregnant, so
yeah.
Not doing all the like promo spots and the kind of the pushing that side of things, and you know, not trying to get in with the awards people and not doing all of that stuff, and not the social side, just actually doing the job, which I love. And then also because I'm, you know, somewhat on the like lovey-dovey hippie side of things, feeling like a real responsibility not to get too stressed out.
Yeah.
Because I'm pregnant, I'm carrying this little person in me.
Yeah.
That all the excitement I feel should be positive excitement.
Yeah.
So not reading reviews, not checking audience numbers, really just going, I have a duty, not just to myself, but like a duty to be happy and relaxed through this month if I'm going to do it.
Yes.
Carrying this other person who's entirely dependent on my hormonal and endocrine system. Like,
yes.
Turns out you can.
You can. Well, you know what, though? What
you can have a nice Edinburgh.
You can have a nice Edinburgh if you let all that other shit go. It reminds me, I remember seeing my doctor with my first child, and basically he said, I wish you would take care of yourself the same way you are right now when you're not pregnant. And it really struck me, like, it's very confronting as a, you know, feminista communista, where I'm like, oh, of course I will do these things because of this other human that I have a responsibility to, rather than going, why aren't you enough?
Yeah. So this is a recent, fairly recent hack that I've done on my own brain, which is that I don't, so this is like finishing the book kind of helped me through this of like, I've always focused on work that is deliverable to other people.
Yeah.
And in the same way, care that is deliverable to other people rather than care for myself.
To yourself, yeah.
And I've spent my whole life sort of kicking myself about that as a character failing.
Yes.
That I can't sit down and write for 8 hours, but if somebody wants something from me, I'll put in the work and get it done.
Yeah.
And then I was like, well, actually, if I just set up other people to need things from me, then I will always deliver.
Yeah.
So what I need to do is decide what I want to do and then set up the structures so they're asking it of me.
I totally understand. And that is, I mean, in terms of this podcast, that is the joy of aging. Right, of finally getting to that point where you start to really, and for a lot of people, I think it is around 40. For some, it's earlier, some it's later, where you start to shed scripts that aren't yours.
Yeah.
You know, like you don't need to read reviews. You don't need the validation of the car guy in the fucking Herald Sun, right? Just ignore it and do the work.
Well, but also that there's a shortcut to the work, which is that you can either I can fix my brain probably, and that's a lifelong work where, you know, maybe I can make myself have high enough self-esteem that I will deliver for myself, or I can just be like, I'm going to hire an editor and they are going to need a chapter from me every week.
Yeah. Yes. And you've got a deadline. Yeah.
And then I've got the deadline. And so, meanwhile, you know, you can heal the hole in your soul, and that's a long and ongoing work, but actually just hacking the brain that you have rather than feeling shit about the brain you have.
Yeah, that's right. And accepting
much
it.
Much more effective.
Yes, absolutely. I call it shouting into the wind. You know, it's like, I shouldn't be this. I shouldn't do that. This person shouldn't be this. And I mean, in the context of dating and relationships in the broad sense, romantic or otherwise, I mean, one thing I've learned over life, you have to take people how they are today. You know, you can't say or leave them, right? Yeah. But that idea that you sit there going, well, if you just would do this, then your behavior would improve or you would be easier to, You can't meet people like that.
Yeah, one of the best pieces of advice I got about relationships was off one of these like bananas sort of Christian ladies online who does the, you know, wife, whatever they call it, trad wife.
Trad wife, things. Traditional wife, yeah.
But you know, I try not to let the personality influence my opinion of the advice. She said one of the good ways to approach a relationship, whether it's, and obviously for her it was with her husband, but like I think even with your friends or your loved ones in other ways, is like they're your PhD subject. So when they do something annoying or weird, your reaction isn't anger, it's curiosity.
Yes,
like 100%. Where did that come from? And maybe the answer is, oh, they're fucked and you don't want to be with them. But not letting it trigger that kind of weirdly for something that's like romantic and in your body and or even with friends, it's in your body. It's like about your feelings. Having that slightly academic angle, I think has really, really helped me because it's where I'm comfortable. It's like, huh. Interesting.
Yes.
I'm like, my feelings.
You know? The curiosity. I think we've talked about that before in terms of arguments. You know, if you go into an argument determined to win or to be right, you know, it's that old thing, do you want to be right? Do you want to be happy? If you go in with curiosity, you're far more likely, A, to de-escalate the situation and B, to be happy at the end of it.
Yeah. I really like finding out why I'm wrong. I don't like being wrong. It's a fucking horrendous feeling, and like having to like dismantle some part of yourself that you felt was like was a real load-bearing opinion or something. Like I really don't like that feeling.
Yeah.
But the like figuring out where there was a glitch or a mismatch or where you just took someone's word for it, but actually that's I think is like a real thrill.
Yeah. Or you projected. Or you misunderstood, or you even, I mean, as benign as in this age of texting, you missed tone, you know, or there were so many messages, you missed one, and that would have contextualized the others. Yeah. I think that curiosity is a really interesting thing to keep in mind in this way and for yourself, you know. Yeah. So when you are doing that imposter shit, which is absolutely not true, end of story, but we all do it. To then go, where's that coming from?
Yeah.
You know, rather than Alice, don't be so weak.
Yeah. Why am I being mental right now?
Yeah. What happened to me? Yeah. You know, and obviously you can over excavate, I think, if you're an academic, you know, if you're a thinking person, you can over analyze that. But I think it's a good place to start to kind of go, where did this feeling come from? Because it doesn't actually seem real.
Yeah, I think the analysis, while I love it, can also be a bit of a trap because it doesn't necessarily solve the problem to understand the problem.
No.
Like I know why I feel the need to overachieve. It's because my mom was sick and she didn't get to. So I feel like my time is limited and I feel like I have to prove things. And part of what I have to prove is that she could have done brilliant things if she hadn't been sick because she was more naturally brilliant than I am. And so I have to sort of, you know, and that's what it is. But did you ever see Laura Davis's show Pillow of Strength?
No.
So Laura's one of my best friends in the whole world, and she did a show called Pillow of Strength. And the thing that stuck with me out of that incredible show was it was a show about how she fooled herself in an abusive relationship into thinking that because she understood why he was doing this hurtful shit.
Yes.
By understanding why, she thought that it wasn't hurting her.
Yes.
Because she, and this is a really interesting thing that I don't think gets talked about in discussions of abuse, that you feel like the bigger man. You're like, oh, I can take it. He's damaged. He's weak. I'm the one who can take it because I understand. I get it. I can forgive him. He's, you know, he's a baby in this situation. And that understanding and that analysis and that kind of ability to encompass something in your intellect doesn't actually stop it from damaging you.
Of course it doesn't. And it That is a, if we do, I mean, obviously the mind-body separation is complicated, but let's just accept it as a premise. That's nothing to do with what's happening in your body. It's all in your brain. So yeah. Your brain's going, oh, I understand, because this happened to him in childhood, or she experienced this, or what. That is not a pass. Like, I can't be any more clear. It is not okay to behave in an abusive way.
We all know people who've been in therapy forever who are just as fucked up as they ever were. We all know people who
abused, Alice.
The stand-up comedians who get on stage and like, I'm a piece of shit, and these are the ways in which I'm a piece of shit. And then after like a couple of years, you're like, and like,
what have you been doing about it?
And what's the next, I did this terrible thing, and I did this shameful thing, and that's what's funny about me, is that I'm a piece of shit, but I'm self-aware.
Yeah.
And therefore it's forgivable because I understand what a piece of shit I am.
Yeah, no.
Like, well,
no. No, and it's not funny
being
either.
Being a bad friend.
Yeah,
know?
That's right. Change. Like, you have the resources to change. And I think we're at an interesting moment. So when I worked in family violence, it's like 20 years ago, more than 20 years ago, and there was a lot less information, particularly around coercive control, emotional abuse, all that. It was very physically based in the ether, right? Now we have a lot more understanding about that, but at the same time, we have this proliferation of pop psychology. So you've got these two things that kind of enable each other in a way, because you can read the memes and read the books and go, oh, I understand. Like, I can say, I understand trauma and PTSD. And well, that's all well and good, and you can have sympathy. That doesn't mean you have to be in a relationship with that person. Like, it's not okay.
Yes. Yeah, and the sort of odd idea that having suffered makes you immune from inflicting suffering.
It sure does not. You know, one of the things, just for the purposes of the listeners, that I always come back to, there was a really strong trend in the sort of late 90s, early 2000s, where men's mental health became a lot more of a prominent discussion, and there were a lot of discussions about the contribution of, say, depression, addiction, a whole range of other things to family violence, which always really irritated me, because anyone who's worked with perpetrators of family violence knows they make choices to do that to the person that they live with. If they were in, for example, a psychotic episode, they would punch the bouncer. They would have a go at the guy at the servo. They would take their dad on. They are making a conscious choice to perpetuate that in their household.
So it's like, this is a super fascinating thing about one of the interesting things to follow, if you follow psychology or brain stuff, is the ways in which various forms of madness track technology. So there was a Russian princess who, when glass was becoming like really widely available, beautiful clear glass in like large quantities, had the delusion that she was made of glass. And then, you know, people who are having psychoses at various times in history thought it was the FBI or aliens or God. So that you have, you know, the mental illness, the madness that is in you, whatever it is. But it is not just the thing. It attaches to what's happening in society.
Correct.
And the influences and the opinions that you have formed about what's powerful and what's important and what's a valid target.
Yes.
And so you might be mad, but the direction in which your madness goes is not random.
It's absolutely not random. And I mean, to me, it's as simple as, if violence was excused by alcohol, depression, you know, a whole range of other things that we hear about, then there'd be a lot more violent women, right? So, you know, it is a contributing factor, no doubt. There's a contributing factor to the extent of violence, for example, and the seriousness of injuries, to be really explicit, but it is not the cause. It is not the cause. And we have to stop excusing it, I think.
Yeah, I remember there was a guy who used to chop up bits of newspaper and foil and throw them at you. He'd jump out of the bushes and throw them at you and sort of scream bits of Bible verse and swearing. And I remember very clearly walking with my friend Joseph, who is 6 foot too broad, built like a rugby player, and we were walking up to the corner that this man used to inhabit. And I put my hand on Joseph's shoulder just to be like, oh, sorry, I should, this guy's going to leap out in a second.
Yeah.
And I saw the guy start to move and then clock how big Joseph was and then pop back into his
and
little.
Retreat.
And I was like, okay, three things. First of all, Joseph lives in a world that man does not exist.
Yeah.
He walks through the streets thinking the streets are not full of people who jump out at you and throw things.
Joseph does not have his keys between his fingers.
Yeah.
He's not sitting in the back corner of the train so he can see all the stuff. Yeah.
You're missing out. The keys between the fingers. You never know when you're going to meet the thief whose heart you can unlock. Number two, this guy would have conversations with pigeons.
Yeah.
He was completely disconnected from the reality that we inhabit. Yeah. But there was some survival instinct that went, nah.
No. Totally.
Not the big guy.
Do you know what else? There's not a, in this context, there's a lack of cultural and personal permission. And I think that is the key. When you work with perpetrators of whatever gender, usually male is the truth. That is just the stats, but there are female perpetrators. They have an entitlement to control. And that is highly gendered, culturally specific, and a reason why that kind of guy talking to the pigeon is going to throw something at you and not at Joseph.
So one of the super weird, counterintuitive and like glitchy things that I found out from a friend of mine who does like a lot of work in refugee camps is that one of the things that makes abuse less psychologically damaging is if everyone is undergoing it.
Yes, 100%.
So if you're in a society where everyone hits their wives, it's not that you won't be as physically damaged.
Yes.
But you're just kind of like, oh, well.
Yes.
Whereas if you think it's, if it's a terrible, dirty secret and you think it's just happening to you, that's more damaging. Now, this is not an argument for everyone to hit their wives.
No.
But
yes,
what it is saying is about this entitlement and what you feel entitled to sort of plays into this story.
Well, and I think to me it makes complete sense, because if a whole group of people are going through a collective trauma, it's not personalized and individualized. And also going back to your point, you can't then be the victim survivor in your brain going, oh, but why did he do it? What happened? Like, this happened to him. You
why
can't
me?
Be excusing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a collective experience. Fuck, we've gone dark, Alice.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry. Let's talk about relationships.
Two comedians meet on a podcast. That's all right. You know what? This is all part of it. So I'm very interested, speaking of, I mean, it's a difficult area, but you've raised it, so I'm going to ask you about it. This self-esteem issue, I would like to know, A, where it comes from. I mean, I understand the trajectory of the perfectionist thing of I've kind of got to live for my mum. I get that part. Did it precede that, or did it come from that experience of losing your mum?
Well, my mum was sick my whole life. She had MS.
Yeah.
And so looking after her was the way that I grew up.
Yeah.
And there were things that we did as a family that were, you know, I think we dealt with it as a family about as well as anyone could. But a lot of those ways of thinking and behaviors are not really optimized for life outside of that extreme situation.
Yes.
And it's a really funny set of circumstances, because if anyone had been doing it on purpose, it would have been abusive. But what it was just a shitty situation where you had, for example, the reality that if we, my twin brother and I, were too emotional or too intense or too self-focused or made life hard for the people around us in the way that children do, when mum was distressed, she got sicker.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's If you had a narcissistic parent going, oh, you're making mummy sick,
that would
fuck up a child.
Yes. But mummy was
actually
what would
happen if she was tired, if she was exhausted.
Yeah.
So, you know, if, for example, the house was messy and dad mentioned it when he came home from work, then mum would be upset and beat herself up about it, and then she would get sick. So what do? You make
you
sure
don't mention
that
it.
Doesn't happen. You make sure that the house is clean. Yeah. You make sure that everything is easy and nice, and not only that everything is easy and nice, but that no one sees the work that you put in to make it easy and nice. Because you don't want them to feel like shitty parents.
No.
Because that in itself is upsetting, to think that people are working really hard to keep you happy and comfortable.
Oh, yes. So yes.
That, again, you know, and there were like really nice family stories about that we had, that about looking after each other, that helped us and through this situation. It was, you know, we were united against the common enemy that was mum's illness. But when you take those habits into the real world and into relationships, you can fall into pretty bad patterns. Not communicating your needs.
Oh yeah. Not having any.
Not having any.
Let alone communicating them.
Making yourself invisible or amenable or whatever it happens to be, or thinking of conflict as dangerous, thinking of making a fuss as dangerous, thinking of drawing a boundary as potentially harmful.
Yes.
Like, I don't think I knew until my 20s that you could have a fight and it not be the end of a friendship.
Yeah. Yeah.
That you could have a fight and that was actually good.
Yeah. You could repair.
That it was actively better to have a fight than not.
Yes, that's right. Like, because if everything is, if you are hiding the work in the broad sense, the literal work and then the emotional work, then you're that duck, just like your feet are like paddling madly under the water, but you're kind of cruising along and nothing's getting sorted out.
Well, and in the same way of like, it's not fair to the people you're with to let them be annoying.
To not
because
pull
they,
them up
if they
on their
knew
shit.
That if they knew they were being shitty, if they knew they were being lazy, if they knew they were missing the ball, if they knew they were hurting their feeling, your feelings, they would feel like shit.
Yes.
And if I found out that someone had been secretly, being hurt by me, for
resentful.
Years, I would feel dreadful. And it's not fair to someone to not let them be better.
Yeah.
Become better, give them the opportunity to be better. So like that, learning that was like fucking hard work, man.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm still not good at it.
I was going to say, that's an ongoing thing. If you've been, for whatever reason, a parentified child is the way that I'd put it in shorthand, undoing that, I mean, that's a lifetime of work, but you can, like, you get better. And the more you practice it, because I find that fascinating, the idea of your coping mechanisms individually and as a family served you under extreme circumstances. And I would say the same in my upbringing for different reasons. And there'd be other people who I'm sure listening who would relate to it for the same or different reasons. The problem is, once you're then removed from that situation, those coping mechanisms are maladaptive.
Yeah.
And they start to harm you and potentially other people. And that's the work, right? That's why I'm always banging on about how important therapy is, or whatever it is you need to do that inner work. But you got to make those connections, or I don't know how you do relationships in a healthy way.
Well, you end up with people who need you or can't live without you.
Yeah.
Who aren't good for you.
Yeah.
And then you're in a situation where, what, you have to suffer for the rest of your life and swallow it.
Yeah.
Or they get hurt.
Yeah.
You know, you can put yourself into really nasty corners where you make yourself responsible for somebody else's emotions in a way that isn't good for you and isn't good for them.
Oh, my God, Alice, I feel like you're Dr. Filling me. I don't know if you're talking to me, but I feel like you're talking to me. I feel both seen and terrified at the same time.
Well, it's one of those comedian things as well.
Yeah,
there's many comedians who have a version of this, that so much about being with a crowd is this control thing.
Yeah.
I can make them happy.
Oh, and I can control the narrative and I can be heard. I mean, whenever I'm interviewed about, you know, people always want to know, how do you get into comedy? Why would you want to be a comedian? Were you the class clown? Like, no, most of us weren't class clowns. Like, we were the nerds. We come from situations and families for whatever reason, a range of reasons, where we weren't heard or didn't feel seen. And there's something about being on stage and the little Nelly and the little Alice going, you're going to listen to me now, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the power of it and also the terror.
Yeah. Yes. You look back at your own work and you see the through lines, you know, at the time it felt like one thing and then another thing. But in retrospect, you can draw a straight line through the things, you know.
And don't you hate that? I hate that. When I look back at it and I go, oh, God, that was so transparent. I thought I was being so clever.
Well, I mean, for me, I look back at the work that I've done that often deals with, like, quite hard issues, and a lot of it is, like, wanting in a slightly vicious way to use comedy to ease people into a position where they trust me enough that I can take them by the cheeks and point their eyes at a thing that they wouldn't look at otherwise. And I go, fucking look at it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and you're safe with me and I'll bring you out into another laugh.
Yeah.
But fucking look at this thing. Yeah. Because look, you want to look at it.
Walk toward it. Absolutely. So tell me, as I know you're, and I completely respect this, I know you're very private about your private life, whatever we call that, but can we confirm that you are in a relationship?
Yes, I'm locked down. I'm in a solid one. I've got a toddler and another one on the way, and I am co-parenting. So
you're not in the on the market.
Not on the market. This is a really, so when I started out in comedy, there was a trend, and I think it's partly because there was only ever one woman on the bill.
Yeah.
So you'd tend to see women talking about more or less the same stuff. Because comedy is a dialectic. You're talking, you're like, well, I won't talk about that because she's talking about that, and I will talk about this. There was just I don't know, I must have just seen a run of comedians who would open their sets with, like, my boyfriend this, or my girlfriend this, or why am I single?
Yes.
And
you didn't
want to
do that. Yeah.
Well, I didn't want to do that. I didn't want that to be my material.
Yeah.
And so just out of the gate, as a kind of creative constraint, I said, I'm never going to talk about my relationships or my sexuality or my gender. I'm just going to do the jokes.
Yeah.
And part of that was an internalized sexism as well. I didn't want to be a female comic. I just wanted to be a comic, you know, a real comic, not a female comic, a real comic. And then I was with someone who didn't want to be part of my stand-up. And, you know, my twin brother, for example, never wants to be part of my stand-up. And then I realized how useful that is as a way of staying sane about the stories that I tell, which are very personal, to remind myself that they are craft. Like Savage, which is about the suffering and death of my mum. My twin brother does not appear in that story. Well, I know it's not the whole truth. It's a very razor thin slice of reality that I'm using to make a point artistically. And that I feel makes me freer than if I could talk about, like, sex problems that I had last night. You know, like I can talk
Although I'm here for that too. You know what though? Honestly, by the time you and I met, I'd stopped doing stand-up. So and I'm, you know, pre-YouTube. So but I was actually very similar, but for different reasons. Like, for me, it's an ethical dilemma is the way I put it. I think there is a incredible power imbalance. If you get up on, like, I can't bear when I see people get up on stage and eviscerate their exes or their current partner or their children, you know, like, I just, they didn't sign up for that. They don't have a right of reply. And the trade-off is to go, okay, then I can't tell the whole story. Okay. But I get to be a human.
Well,
you know,
and, And also you never get to tell the whole story.
No, like, of course you don't.
There's so many, like, the between between what exists in reality, what you can see, what you can understand, and what you can express, there's like four or five steps of distillation.
Yeah.
That means that even if you're just filming reality, you're making choices about where to point the camera. And there's bits that aren't coming across. What does it smell like? You know, what's the vibe?
What's the vibe in the room? And also, Alice, the author's dead. You've been to uni. You know that. This leads aside the audience and the projections that they bring to your stories and your personality and their impression of you and all of that kind of stuff. I think I have no problem with that editing, and particularly in the context of today's podcast, we do not need to go anywhere that you don't want to go.
Well, I mean, for me, this process is like so fascinating. Because, yeah, between your mouth and the audience's ears, there's a massive gap. I've done the same show to an audience and had two emails. One person who said that, you know, this subject was so freeing for them because they were in the midst of, you know, this suffering and they felt really relieved. And another person who said, you should have a trigger warning on this. It's so traumatic.
Yes, yes, yes. And you know what, Alice, on an even more...
You're like, yes, correct.
An even more benign you will walk out on stage. Anyone will walk out on stage. One person will read my gait, my face, my clothing, my hairstyle, my whatever in a completely different way, my age, my size, whatever, in a completely different way to the next person, and they are listening to me through that lens.
Yep. It's one of the reasons why I don't play the banjo as much in the UK.
Really?
Yeah, because in Australia, people can read my accent.
Yeah.
As a particular thing, and they make assumptions about that.
Yeah.
And so, or just even when I started out, the fact that I was a woman.
Yes.
But like, just coming out with a banjo, which is a slightly unusual instrument, just gives you that second of grace where they're not sure what to make of you, and you get to help them decide what to make of you.
Yes.
And in the UK. Yeah, I am the banjo. Like, you can't necessarily read my accent. They can't necessarily place me. So I have that second to help them, to help control.
Isn't that that stuff so fascinating? That you know, just the amount of so the banjo basically lets the way that I would read it, if I can do a cultural studies analysis of Alice Fraser, is, you know, this might be uncomfortable for you, but you're a very good looking woman. You walk out on stage, that can actually be a real negative in stand-up in terms of being taken seriously, depending on the audience that you're in front of. And you walk out on stage, you're softly spoken, you're well-spoken. The banjo lets people know, I'm a bit weird. Yeah. It's all right, chill.
Yeah. Right. Yes, and it's a way of doing that thing that I never wanted to be self-deprecating on stage.
Yeah.
In a way that a lot of Australian comics are.
Yeah, no, I don't like it.
I didn't want
to
put myself down.
No, good.
And so it's a way, but then obviously the counterpoint is that comedy is a status game, and if you come in and they think you think you're better than them, then you're fucked. So it's a way of, just changing up the status, two-stepping them on status so they're not quite sure.
Well, you're fucked if you're a young, hot woman, right?
Well,
there's plenty of guys who come out on stage high status and the audience will accept that and, in fact, be abused by the performer.
Yeah.
Okay, this is so interesting. This is so fun. He's abusing you.
Right? Yeah.
You know what? You and I got to nerd out on comedy. I'm going to move us on. Right, I'm going to hit you with a meme.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This is a very middle-aged thing to do, and you're going to just go with it, mm-hmm. my love. Okay, so yes. Armchair expert. I would like to know, this is some meme from, what is it, Happy and Healthy Life page on Facebook. And shut up, leave it, mm-hmm. leave it. Mm. It says, don't feel bad if someone rejects you. People usually reject expensive things because they can't afford them. Side splitting. But the reason I want to ask you about this is because I'm fascinated to pick your brain about rejection. Okay. So a lot of people listening to this podcast will be in the situation where they are dating. Some for the first time in decades, some have been dating for a long time. You cannot be in the relationships, friendships, family ether and not get rejected. Mm. So do you have any pearls of wisdom on rejection? How do you handle rejection?
Mm. I would have done better in life had I failed more often earlier.
Mm.
I think it's important to fail
mm.
a lot and realize that it's
work
okay.
or relationships?
In everything.
In everything. Yeah.
I think it's important to take the sting out of failure. I think I have a friend who has a teenage daughter who mm. is on the autism spectrum, and she's mm. terrified of failure.
Yeah.
And she's driving herself up the wall with mm. this sort of crippling fear that means she mm. can't do anything.
Mm.
And my advice to her, which helped crystallize my advice to myself, was find something low stakes that you don't care about and go fail. And fail at it heaps.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pottery, fucking yeah. bonsai,
yeah.
Something that yeah. means nothing to
yeah.
you.
And baking, for me, that's whatever.
What comedy was.
Yeah.
When I
right.
started out, it was a safe place to fail where no one would be hurt if I failed. It just,
yeah,
you know, something that wasn't part of my identity. I am not a comedian. Mm. I do comedy. It's a thing that I do mm. and it does well or badly and that's interesting,
mm.
but it's not gutting.
Mm.
I'm not a failure. Mm. That thing failed.
Mm.
So whatever that is for you, take the stakes out of it. Find the place mm. that you can fail and fail and fail and fail.
Mm.
Because then you realize that people still love you if you fail, and you realize mm. that you're not ruining anything
mm.
if you fail. And then
can I just
rejection
pick up on
is a
that.
Form of that, right?
Exactly, because I think that is such a perfect way to approach dating. So rather than going, I failed at this, I have been rejected, to reframe it and go, oh, this one didn't work out. Right,
that date
I wasn't
didn't
for
work.
Them.
I wonder why.
Yeah, that didn't yeah. work. And you might say, "I wonder why," or you might go, "Okay."
Yeah,
you know.
Well, I mean, yeah, just doing the process. Also, it's casting, right? You don't actually know someone from a date. You don't
no.
actually know if they're a good actor or not.
No, you know? You don't know them for some time. Indeed, yeah.
So
yeah.
what they are rejecting,
yeah,
isn't. You
yeah
it's yeah. some vision of themselves that
yes.
they have
yeah
and that could be completely limited imagination on their part,
and it could be their vision of you. So going back to that idea of when you walk out on stage, unconsciously or consciously, people are reading
yeah.
you.
But that's
same
the thing.
On a date,
I don't think they have a vision of you.
Yeah, yes, right,
you represent
they can't see it
something
all. Yeah,
they're looking at you on stage and they're like, that's the girl who bullied me in high school.
Yes.
Or which is, you're not that.
No.
Or, you know, they've got a vision in their head of what, you know, in 5 years from now, I'm going to be on a yacht, not with this woman
yeah.
who they've never met.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's got to do with their, like I said, it's casting.
Yeah.
And if you're not what they imagined for that role,
mm.
they're not wrong, but also there's nothing wrong with you.
Yeah, neither of you are wrong. It didn't yeah. work out. I mean, unless they were an absolute asshole or you were, but There's
well,
going
you can make a strong argument that, like, this would have been a better movie if you'd cast a different person that didn't look exactly as you imagined.
Yeah. Or we've made it in a different year. You know, like, it could be as simple as that. Sometimes you got right person, wrong time. I am going to give you a listener call. Are you ready?
Yes.
I'm a massive fan of this. I obviously love that description of The Door Open, which I was just a huge fan of from the start. And, yeah, I really loved listening to Dee and Ellie. I am actually 36, so not over 40, and I am married. I'm married to a man who is 50 and is on his second marriage, so I have three stepchildren, 16, 15, and 8, and a baby of my own who is 6 months. Obviously, being in a marriage with someone who's been married before is interesting, and certainly as someone who is older. I must admit, he works really hard on trying not to make the same mistakes over, which I appreciate, but I think he's quite a hyper-masculine man, and, you know, almost a bit of a cliche within himself. I have noticed as I kind of move into my finishing my first year of marriage, getting to the end of my first year of marriage, there are certain things in which he does that frustrates me, that when I speak to my friends, it's kind of like, oh, that's men. Mostly, I guess, I spend a lot of time organising the household and making sure everything runs smoothly, especially with, on every second weekend, four children, different ages, different needs, and making sure that everyone has something to do and to eat and things like that. And I really try to make sure everyone is covered, to spend enough time with their dad. But he will frequently forget the plans I've made. And then, you know, if someone asks, one of his kids asks him to do something, he'll say yes without realizing that I've planned things. And he's, you know, what he is the kind of dad that just wants to say yes to everything because he's obsessed with his children. However, it's very frustrating. I'm wondering if you would have any advice, especially as someone who I suppose has been in a relationship in which things like that, I would imagine, create resentment over time. Now, do I think he'll ever remember every plan we have? No. Do you think, any advice you'd give to someone in a relationship with a hetero man as to, I guess, how to find a way that it's not just me getting irritated with him all the time over just basic things that men do? I suppose at what point do we kind of give up on weaponized incompetence, if you will? And, you know, when do I say I need a level of effort that future bring to this? Because I imagine so many of the women who listen to you have had situations like this in relationships where men just are being men. However, you know, I can already see a year in how easy it would be to have this build as a resentment. So any advice you have on how to, I guess, navigate that, I guess, if you had your time again or things you might do differently, would be great to know. So thank you. Keep up the amazing work. And just, you know, just being this incredible, authentic, genuine powerhouse of a person who I am just in awe of.
Oh, well, that's, I mean, lovely. Thank you for the last thing. That's lovely. Wow. I mean, I have so many thoughts, but let's start with yours. What do you think?
When is the time to tell him? Fucking now.
Yes. Now. Yes. Now.
It's not fair to him to be cultivating resentment in yourself. Mm. You're making all these effort, all these plans, and he's ignoring them either because he doesn't see them. He doesn't understand how much work is going into them, or because those things aren't important to him.
Mm.
I don't think it's your responsibility to manage his children's relationship with him. Mm. So maybe just let it be on him. don't just stop, but like just go, hey, I've been putting in all this work. This is the work I've been putting in. Doesn't seem to be something that you value.
Mm. Mm.
So I'm going to stop. So the weekend, we're not going to make plans. You can decide what the plans are. I'll go along with it. They're your kids. I'm easy and I'll either come along if it's something I can do with the baby, or I'll stay at home and relax. Or you can take the fucking baby and I'll stay at home and put my feet up. Like, I don't think it's worth trying to be perfect if the crop that you're reaping is your own resentment.
Oh, absolutely. Advice. So a couple of things came to me. Wonderful Helen Thorne, who's been on the podcast a couple of times, shared a great bit of advice where that was given to her, which is choose guilt over resentment, because guilt will pass, resentment will grow. So in the that first moment that you say, look, I'm not going to organize all the stuff for the weekend. If you organize it, like, I might join in, you're going to feel like shit. If you're used to being a people pleaser, if you're used to running the family, if you've taken that role on consciously or unconsciously, you're going to feel bad the first couple of times. Eventually you will get used to that feeling and hopefully things will shift. The opposite is that you will continue to do this and that resentment will absolutely build and fester, and you can't, there's a point you can't come back from it, right? Even if they agree to change. And how many times do we see in relationships of all gender configurations where it comes to the end and the other person says, oh, I'll change that. Well, the drawbridge is up now. You know, there's a point at which you can't come back.
Yeah, and love is paying attention. It's not mind reading necessarily.
Yes.
So how clued in is this guy about the effort you're putting in and about the hurt that he's causing?
Yeah.
I don't know what your communication levels are like, but, you know, I assume he loves you. You're married. So give him the chance to be better. Give him the chance not to be the shitty man.
Yeah.
You know, whether that's making the invisible load visible.
Visible, yeah.
By describing it as it, as you go, or making an invisible load visible by going on strike.
Yes.
Or just having the conversation. And making a plan for how you're going to go forward, because you like just even, hey, I don't want to be resentful of you.
Yes.
I love you.
Yes.
This is what is making me resentful of you. So would you like to pick up the slack, or would you like me to just back off?
Yeah. Yeah. How can we manage
that conversation?
It? Yes.
You know,
I 100% agree. One thing I will say though, which I have experienced and I hear so many, particularly female callers, but not just, say, communication is not just about the telling, they have to listen, right? So I think we are also, because of the time that we're in where we are more aware of communication and pop psychology and maybe actual therapy, we think it's enough to say, you're hurting my feelings, my resentment is growing, I need you to start picking up your towels. That does not mean they are going to hear it. And there will be women screaming into their fucking earphones listening to this going, I've tried to do that, right? I've tried, and they're not coming to the party.
They're not, yeah. This, I mean, this is very true. Obviously, like I said, I don't know this person's level of communication with their partner. But, like, just making it our problem rather than your problem.
Yes.
Like, this is a problem that I want you to help me solve.
Yes.
What can we do?
Yes.
Because this is not sustainable.
No, it's not sustainable. And I think the idea, I don't know, I could be reading too much between the lines, but I have the sense from a couple of things she said, the idea, it sounds like her friends are literally saying this to her, the idea that this is just what men do. I unequivocally do not accept that. Right. We know that there are men who don't do that. We know that men are competent, capable people. I will also say, as someone who's been in relationships with men and women, there are women who do this. Right. So can we please take the not that I'm suggesting it's necessarily an excuse, but it's not good enough to kind of go, oh, well, maybe like guys just don't see the dishes. Yeah, they do. They see the dishes and choose not to do them, or you haven't communicated.
They see the dishes and it has not been drilled into them that yes. dirty dishes reflects badly on them.
Yes.
So it is somebody else's, literally, it is somebody else's problem because it causes yes. a problem for somebody yes. else.
Yes.
And you can't expect it to, somebody to be as invested in yeah. solving a problem for somebody else that, as they are for themselves.
Mm. Mm.
So, yeah, I mean, again, this is one of the things that of trying to change someone and who they are, and he's of an older generation and he's just a man like this.
Mm.
What does he work on? What is his motivator? Maybe you send a fucking calendar invite for a weekly honest conversation about the things that are pissing you off, like whatever it takes. Doesn't matter how weird or sideways the hack is.
No.
If it works. So what does make him work? What would make him do the work?
I think, and if he's prepared, because I hate on advice podcasts where people sit on the fence. So I'm going to give her the advice that I genuinely would give a friend, which is I would say try that, because again, you and I both don't know what's their level of communication. Is he even aware?
Maybe she's expressed this before. Maybe she's never expressed it. I don't
know. Let's assume that she hasn't. That would be my first port of call. Like, try that. Sit down. Have a state of the nation. Be really honest. This resentment is building. I'm worried it's going to affect our relationship. It's affecting my sense of safety and security, all the things. This is what I'd like to see. If he will not meet you in that conversation or make effort, then you've got a really hard decision to make. And that decision might be, and is for a lot of people, that I can't live like this. And that may actually mean some big decisions about whether or not to end the relationship.
Or the decision could be, I can live like this and it will be fucking miserable.
Yeah. Oh, well,
and
yes.
What do I owe my baby, and what do I owe this relationship, and what do I owe? I think that's a really tricky bind to find yourself in. But yeah, it is the decision of like what, when you go into a negotiation, what are you willing to spend?
Yes.
Are you willing to, you know, what's on the table here?
Yes.
Is this?
Yes.
That you get a shittier wife for the next 20 years because she's not happy? Is it that you don't get a wife next year? Where are your lines, and kind of be aware and conscious of them going into the conversation? Not that you should like threaten somebody, but you know, just know what they are in yourself, I would say.
Yes.
Because, you know, I also, on a slightly Machiavellian and sneaky level, it sounds like his children are older. They're capable of having a conversation with you. Tell them your plans. Be like, this is what we're doing next week. Next time you're here, we're going to do this and this and this. Plan it a month in advance and then commit them to it. And it doesn't matter whether he wants to come along or not.
Oh, you've gone to logistics, Alice. I like it.
Yeah, yeah. Slightly Machiavellian. But like, you know, if he's not going to remember, they'll remember if it's a fun thing that they want to do.
And you know what?
If they don't want to do it, why would you bother doing it?
Yes. And in this situation, let's say, for example, you go into this conversation and you're both open and curious and all the things we talked about before. And he says, look, I know that I'm not doing well in this area. Like, I know that my memory is poor, or I've taken this for granted or whatever. And can we work together on strategies? For me, I'm like, I'm open. Let's do that. Like, it's not a black and white, you're not doing it, we're done, or you get this perfect, we're done. It's not that. But I will also say, from my own experience, and of course, I'm just being careful with my own disclosures. You know, I remember there was a situation where I was in that classic thing that so many women are in of doing all the work at Christmas. We're heading into Christmas, and I would cook for days, and I would do the presents, and the tree's up, and there's fucking reindeer, you know, footprints on the floor and all the rest of it. And there was a point at which I could feel that resentment building and talk to the people involved and said, I don't want to do Christmas this year. I'm exhausted. I want a year off. I want to be able to just show up, laid it all out in a very like kind and generous way. That Christmas, Alice, there was no food, right? So there is a reality sometimes that no matter how well you communicate, the other parties simply will not meet you where you need to be met, and that's where the hard decision comes.
Well, and also how much are you doing this for you? How much is this just this the Christmas that you want to see?
Yes.
And how willing are you on the Christmas where there's no food to be like, all right, we're Jewish this year, let's go see a movie and get some Chinese food.
Yeah, no, not willing, Alice. Not willing.
Yeah. Well, then, that's the thing. Who is more invested in the thing?
Yes. No, I accept that. I accept that. I think you're right about that, because you can have a big investment in having a tidy house or a Christmas lunch or whatever you celebrate, all the presents, whatever it is. Having said that, I do think there is some responsibility on your partner to somewhat meet that. You know, that's if it's important to you, then there should be a level at which it's important to them.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? I agree. And then it's a sort of a matter of figuring out how to make it easy for them to meet that need for you.
Or at least meet, we're talking meet 60% of it. So, aiming for perfection is a fool's errand for all of us from both sides.
Yeah. Without revealing too much about my own kind of history, I'm not going to place this in time, but I have put calendar reminders in for like, give Alice a hug.
Yes. Yes. Oh, don't
because
get
I need more affection. I need more affection. Yes. And then you can resent it. It's like, why don't they love me? No, yes. It's just, they express it in a different way.
Yeah.
And so, but you're like, okay, this is a thing I need. And I am willing to fucking set up a reminder in your phone.
Yeah. What I will be really clear on though, for this caller and listeners, okay, I accept those sorts of strategies, but do not talk yourself into thinking that that's too needy, right? Mm-hmm. It is okay to go, I need a certain level of affection, or I need you to make a big deal out of my birthday, or whatever it is, the things that matter to you, they should be able to make an attempt to meet that.
Yeah.
Don't talk yourself out of it, is what I'm saying, because I think I've certainly done that in the past as well. I shouldn't need that. I shouldn't need that. Well, I do.
Well, to go back to Laura Davis's show, just because you understand something or can intellectualize it doesn't necessarily change the fundamental emotional reality of what's going on.
That's right.
It doesn't cease to do you damage just because you think it's silly that it is doing you damage.
Yes. And that shit will sit in your body and fester. So I think the short story with the caller, I appreciate the call, and I reckon there'll be plenty of people listening, as I said, in all gender configurations, honestly, who will recognize this, because I'm yet to see a relationship that's 50-50 all the time. Like, that is simply not the case for most couples. I would say do exactly what Alice has said, like work out what it is you want that he's not doing. Come to him and communicate to him in a way that's not ultimatum based to start off with. Actually going, I'm curious about why this is happening. I need you to be curious about how it affects me. Let's talk about it. Let's strategize. Can we change this?
Even like, what do you think happens on weekends?
Yes.
What is it from your perspective?
Yes.
That you just want to have a chill, loosey-goosey time with your children, and that these plans are kind of getting in your way and you're sort of deliberately ignoring them. Or it could be, you can't know what's in somebody else's head until you ask.
Yeah.
And even
and
then,
I totally,
they're probably
and even
wrong.
Then, they've got to know. They've got to know, right? They've got to have the insight. The other thing I'd say, and I totally agree with you on this, Alice, is this is a blended family, and this is a really common and difficult problem. I think when you are step parenting or you're an adult in someone else's family or however you want to describe it, I reckon there's an opportunity here to go, hey, go and do stuff with your kids. I'll have some time with the baby or on my own, you take the baby and just see how that goes. Like, just give it a go rather than trying to be the Mary Poppins of the situation. Just kind of handball it. And if they have a shit time, they have a shit time. If they have a great time, good on them. Either way, you just take that time back and stop being the duck, paddling and trying to make everything all right. Just let it go and see what happens. All All right, we're going to end on two of my favorite segments. You go as deep or as shallow as you want, Alice Fraser. We have No Shade on My Ex, where you tell us something silly that an ex has done. I mean, it might be that they needed to be told to hug you, for example. And lastly, there are 10 but. So you're sitting on a date with someone. Obviously, you're in a relationship. You'll have to imagine this. You're sitting on a date with someone. It's a first or second date. It's early on. They're amazing. You're all in. And then they do something where you go, oh, absolutely not. All right. So No Shade on My Ex. Can you share something silly?
Something silly.
I mean, it can be serious as well. Wherever you want to go, I'll go with you.
It's not exactly an ex situation, but this is a high school sort of romance slash friendship where there was a person and our mutual friend was talking up this like attraction between us.
Yeah.
And we would shuttle the notes between us.
Yeah.
And was sort of really invested in the process of our romance.
Yeah.
And then between one school week and the next, this note passer ended up with the person.
Oh. Oh, well, listen, it wasn't you.
No, it wasn't me. I was like, at the time I was like, why? Why would she do that? Like, clearly she hadn't been able to deal with her own attraction to that person.
Yes.
And kind of used me as the tongs.
Yes.
But it was sort of a very Cyrano de Bergerac situation.
You were the conduit.
Except I was the hot dumb one.
Yes. Oh, my God. You couldn't be further from the hot dumb one. But I think this is, I mean, obviously this is par for the course in young relationships, but I think it's worth, even from this age, considering the investment. If you start to get really invested in someone else's relationship, just have a think about what your investment is, you know, like, because we don't always understand our own motivations either. Like, why are you so titillated? One of the things we talk about, for example, on this podcast a lot is how many of my married friends or friends in long-term relationships who are so invested in my dating. And on one level, I get it because I've been that person and it's exciting and you're living vicariously. I think it's also worth considering how that reflects on your relationship. And that doesn't mean your relationship's terrible, but is there something that is missing from your relationship that you would like to get back?
Yeah. Yeah. And there are, even if it's just the feeling of falling in love.
Yeah.
There are other ways to get that than breaking up and starting a new relationship.
There sure are. Yeah. But they do require conscious effort, I think. If you've been together for a long time, you know, I mean, it's such a cliche, but it's true. It's work. You know, you have to it's very easy to put that at the bottom of the list. And you shouldn't be put at the bottom of the list, and nor should you put them at the bottom of the list.
Yeah, I think one of the worst lies our culture tells is about what love is.
Yeah.
That for me, at least, love is finding someone who you're happy to do the work alongside.
Yes.
So if you can imagine yourself at the coal face or facing a problem with them, and the problem is you and your relationship and life and everything that it's going to throw at you and
circumstances.
Aging and all everything.
Yeah.
It's finding a good teammate.
It's not the poetry. It's not the fanny flutters. It's not the new relationship energy. Like, I hope you got all that too. But that's not the foundation. I couldn't agree more. It's the, can I walk toward the difficulties that life is inevitably going to throw up? Will you hold my hand? Yeah. Like, both literally and metaphorically. And I don't know, we've lost that sense, I think.
Yeah.
Oof.
Arrange your own marriage.
Now, there are 10, but you're sitting on a date with, you know, the hottest hot and tot hottie you can imagine, and everything's going great, and then they just do something. Look, try and go superficial. I don't think you're capable, but
there
try.
There are 10, but all their exes are crazy.
Yeah. That's
Oh, are
always a
they?
green flag, right?
Yeah.
It was always everyone else.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? There's some real truth to that. I think if you can be on a date with someone who can show some ownership in the previous relationships that has ended, to me, that's a massive green flag. Yeah, and the opposite is also true. All these bitches be crazy. Really? I'd like to chat to those bitches.
Yeah, I find it so discomforting when people talk degradingly about other people, because
Yeah.
it feels like,
Yeah.
well, if that's in your toolkit, how are you talking about me when I'm not
Yes.
there?
Oh, of course. And how are you going to talk about me when this ends? But even on a really superficial level, and I've been in this situation on a few dates, it's like, aren't you trying to seduce me or at least woo me? Like, why would I want to talk about how crazy your ex is or the shit that they like? It's not hot, Alice. It's not
It's
hot.
not hot. Yeah, if you can't also, yeah, if you can't remember why you loved them or what was good
Yes.
about them or
Yes.
what need they served in you, then
Yes.
your perception of reality is skewed. You're showing
Yes.
either a lack of judgment that you've dated all these crazy bitches one after the
Yeah.
other or a lack of self-awareness that you're rewriting history. And
Yeah.
either of those things is not what I want in a relationship.
No, and I will add the third, you're being rude. Like, I'm here in front of you. So can we talk about me and you and the things we like and get to know each other? Because I don't want to talk about your ex. Like, maybe if you start developing a relationship and you need to understand context and triggers and all of that kind of stuff, totally understand that part of it, of getting into the minutiae of what led you to being single at this age or previous relationships. But if you're going into that on the first date, second date, even the first handful, to me, it's a really bad sign. Either they're not over it, or they're bitter, or they, as you said, they've rewritten history. And if they've rewritten history, they don't have insight. If they don't have insight, they haven't changed, and they're going to be the same with me. Oh, I feel like we've just fixed everything. Now, fabulous Alice Fraser, I almost went to call you beautiful then, and my feminist instincts kicked in. So I will retract that in my own mind and on the podcast. You can be the fabulous Alice Fraser instead. Tell us all
Thank
the
you.
things you're doing. What can we find? Your book's coming out. Let's do the plugs.
So I have a writers meeting, two
Yes.
writers meetings a week. If you join up at patreon.com/AliceFraser, you
Yep.
can currently get access to that and my salons and book clubs for $1 a month, which is stupid, and I
Girl,
will fix it
come
eventually. So
on.
that, but at the moment, well, I got rid of all the levels during COVID because everyone's so stressed about money, and now I have to
Yeah.
reinstitute them. But I am not
Yeah.
organized enough to do that. So jump on
Okay.
board and get extremely high value at
Yes. Yeah.
patreon.com/AliceFraser.
So I will put,
Also,
just before you move on to the next one, I will put a link to that in the show notes. And can I say for people who are listening and don't, may not have a full understanding of what that means, there's plenty of people who want to attempt, a pivot into a creative kind of career. I mean, what a perfect opportunity, like to work with someone who's experienced and in that industry. I mean, the dollar of a month, I mean,
It is
this
objectively
is
stupid. I
insanity,
should.
right? But for the listeners, like if you're thinking, maybe I've got something in me, I've got a story to tell, I want to write, like get into it.
Yes, I have a funny podcast called The Gargle, a
You
serious
do.
podcast called Tea with Alice,
Yes.
and I have a book available at unbound.com.
Yeah.
And I don't even know how to begin to describe it, but go
I
and buy
don't
it.
either. I don't either. And I listen, I've done all the things, and I can't describe it either, other than
It's
to
a
say,
real book about the works of a pretend author that I made
yeah.
up for a stupid podcast, and it's
Yeah.
so dumb and so funny, and
It's
I've just
great.
finished writing it and I think it's really good,
And
so.
if you love words and ideas and feeling slightly, you know what? Your stuff reminds me of a feeling I had in Mona, right? The gallery in Tassie. And I was
Ah,
wandering around,
the
right? And I, yes, the poo machine. And I
poo
went up to a staff member and I said, I feel very lost. Like, I don't know where to go or how to get out. And he's like, yeah, that's how it's meant to feel. Okay. And I really, for someone who does like to have control of a situation, that's really good for me, you know? And
Oh.
that's how I see your what you bring to the world, where I'm like, I don't know what she's doing. Oh, that's amazing. So I will put all the links to all the things. And just because we're both literary nerds, I thought I will share right at the end, and no one can find this, but back in the day in the 90s in Perth, I had a talk back radio show where I answered questions on the Brontes and only the Brontes.
That is
And
wonderful.
people called in. It was called Dear Thomas, and I would only take questions on the Bronte sisters and their work. So I feel we're kindred spirits.
That's good. That's made my day, Nellie. Thank you so much for having me on. This has been genuinely lovely.
Thank you so much. Will you come back? Because I have so many more questions for you.
Yes, any day,
I would
literally.
absolutely love it. And the next time you get to ask me a question, which is most terrifying, but that's how it goes for sloppy seconds. Thank you, Alice
Well,
Fraser.
thank you.
Dear Nelly, I could use some advice, dear Nelly. Yes, some help would be nice, dear Nelly. I'm eager to hear your point of view, dear Nelly. There's a lot to explore, dear Nelly. When you're 40 or more, dear Nelly. So I'm hoping we can talk it through.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.